Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. How could you possibly trust God if God were free? Shockingly, that's the objection we hear from Calvinists when we debate whether the future is settled or open. So on today's program, in just a couple minutes, we'll continue playing excerpts of the debate just 2 weeks ago with one of the leaders of Denver Bible Church, Will Duffy, and a newcomer, a young Calvinist. He's not a theologian, C.J. Bournes. But first, a couple items. Probably 10 times in the past few years, listeners have emailed us and said, did you see this piece in the Babylon Bee? It sounds exactly like the show that you guys just aired 2 days ago. So that's always an honor. Well, this is fun. From November 26th, 2019, headline at the Babylon Bee, conservative slams liberal policies he'll support 5 years from now. That is really great. Fort Worth, Texas, local conservative man thrashed liberals Tuesday for supporting policies that he himself will support in just 5 years. Now, we've always said 10 years. We've been doing this for decades now and saying that conservatives support the issues they fiercely opposed 10 years earlier. But this is the Babylon Bee. They're awesome. They go on. The man says he's staunchly opposed to how fast progressives are changing things and prefers the conservative approach of changing the exact same things, but just on a little bit of a delay. Liberals are ruining this country, he said. Now, the Babylon Bee is a sarcastic fake news website intentionally. It's humorous. It's like on college campuses, The Onion. So this man from Fort Worth, Texas, this fictitious man, says liberals are ruining this country. They go and put forth all these radical ideas that will destroy the fabric of our society. Sure, I end up conceding ground to the libs and supporting policies I would have found appalling just 5 years ago, but I've got to be the voice of reason here and caution everyone against the very ideas I will come to agree with a short time from now. It reminds me of, and we pointed it out at the time, was it Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican, or was it Arizona Senator John McCain, Republican? One of them, same thing. And this was on the floor of the Senate. The senator said, the Democrats are racing toward the edge of the cliff. They're going to ruin us. All I'm saying is just slow down a little bit. I mean, it was really perfect to expose the absurdity, the absolute absurdity of what the Republicans, the so-called conservatives, are doing to the nation. Second item, and then Will Duffy's debate. My wife, Cheryl, she's one of those first I drink the coffee, then I do the things kind of gals. In fact, I guess I'm like that too. First I drink the coffee, then I do the things. So Cheryl and I, our best, most wonderful times are early in the morning. Sometimes she's up at 5 in the morning brewing coffee. And so I asked her before she had her first sip a few days ago, I said, would you like to hear a quote from a gal, a woman from Middletown, Ohio? Cheryl is from Middletown, Ohio. And I said, but this is a serious, heavy topic for before coffee. I don't know what you think. She said, no, what is it? So I said, it's a woman named Candace Keller. She's from Middletown, Ohio, and she's actually a state representative. And she said that the reason they've introduced this abortion bill there is that they're tired of taking an incremental approach to ending abortion Now, this is verbatim from the Associated Press. Quote, "The time for regulating evil and compromise is over," Representative Keller said. "The time has come to abolish abortion in its entirety and recognize that each individual has the inviolable and inalienable right to life." Wow, that's quite a statement, huh? Now, this woman, Representative Keller, doesn't understand the issue of abortion for the life of the mother. And with God's help, she will understand that soon enough. This bill has no exceptions for rape and incest. National Right to Life has been obsessed with promoting exceptions, especially for rape and incest. And it's thanks to the work of a handful of smaller organizations that the pro-life movement at large has come to realize that it is wicked to say that you can kill some children for the crimes of their father. That's evil. It's immoral. It's destructive. Also, eventually, they'll understand what's wrong with an abortion exception for the life of the mother, because when the mother, literally, when the mother is at risk of losing her life and the pregnancy is the root cause, then you deliver the baby and you love and try to care for both patients, the mother and the baby. You don't start delivering the baby and then stop midway to kill the baby. You don't take time out from trying to save the mother so that you have a few minutes to kill the baby. So the life of the mother claim is what began the abortion holocaust in the first place, rape, incest, and life of the mother. And that is explained at the article I had the honor of writing, AmericanRightToLife.org/life. If you Google life of the mother, those three words, Google says there are literally billions of web pages that might be relevant to life of the mother. And I'm so thankful that my article at American Right to Life's website is one of the very top ones on the first page. So you might want to check that out. Okay, so now to Will Duffy's debate against C.J. Borns. This was hosted by the Gospel Truth, Marlon Wilson. We've reached out to Marlon, asked him for permission to air segments of the debate and also to upload the video of this debate to our YouTube channel. Lord willing, we'll be doing that within a week or so. So now we will hear Will Duffy cross-examining this young guy, not a theologian, and this event gives us insight into millions of Christians who believe what they're told about God and the Bible and the future, whether it's settled or open. And so this is an insight into somebody that's not a professional, not a scholar, not a theologian, just believes what they've heard from their Calvinist teachers.
With that said, Will Duffy, you have the first 15 minutes to cross-examine Mr. CJ.
Great. CJ, I boldly claimed in my opening statement that the future is open because God is free. What is your response to that?
I don't understand the question. So you're saying what is my response to the fact that you believe that? What exactly are you asking me?
What is your response to my claim that the future must be open because God is free?
I see what you're saying. Well, I would say that God is free in the sense that what he is done. In other words, God is not... we look at him often through the lens of what we know through creation, but he can't be likened to that because things flow from him. And so he is free in the sense that he is God. He is above everything else, and he has freely chosen to decree whatever shall come to pass. But he is bound by his nature, not because it's some restrictive slavery, but because that is who he is. That is God. And to say he could do something else would be to say that he could change into not God.
So let me jump in here, because we're not talking about being bound by his nature. You actually believe he's bound by his decree. And so you believe that God no longer has the freedom to do anything different than what he decreed. Who prevents God from doing something different than what he decreed?
Well, I would say his decrees flow from his nature. So he's not going to decree something that would be out of his nature. Like, it would be against a dog's nature to meow. I guess it could be possible, but it's not going to happen because that would be outside of his nature. God didn't create dogs to make cat noises. And so that's a little bit different there. That's a picture, but God is, his decrees flow from his, from who he is.
Yeah. So let me give an example, I think, that will help. So you agree that it's not against God's nature to decree a rainstorm, right?
No.
Yeah. And he's decreed rainstorms, right?
Right.
Okay. So in your position, God no longer has the ability to change the amount of raindrops in a rainstorm.
Well, I think that's a silly thing to say, because he knew everything before it happened. If he knew that the rain was going to be, need to be changed beforehand, why would he have not included that into his decree beforehand? That doesn't really make sense. That's saying that God can learn. I don't believe he can learn, because he knows all things already. He's all-knowing.
So you almost became an Arminian there by saying God knew, by saying God knew what would happen. That's the Arminian position. The Calvinist position is that God decreed it, which means he decided and designed it himself.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is he has an exhaustive knowledge of everything. I don't claim to know the way God exactly formulated his decrees. Okay, there's so many things in the Bible that talk about his secret knowledge, and so there's not, I'm not trying to understand how he decreed everything before it came to pass, but that he did.
Okay, and I just want to make sure that the audience is clear on your position, which is that God no longer has the ability to change the amount of raindrops in a rainstorm.
Well, when you say it like that, he's not going to. He has.
That's not my question. No. My question is not, will he? My question is, you believe he no longer has the ability to.
I would say that if he had the ability to, he had the ability to, but he doesn't have the ability to lie. And so what he decreed will come to pass.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Do you believe God could have decreed differently than he did?
I mean, I don't really see how that's relevant, because he didn't. In other words, there's some people, like there's even some Calvinists, and I'm not sure where I feel about this, but people like John Piper, who, it sounds more like a Molinist position, he'll say the best of possible worlds. Have you ever heard that?
Yes.
And there's, you know, there's, it's possible. It's not clear. I can't say definitely that concept is true. In other words, what exactly were you asking me again? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I feel like this is an easy question, which is, could God have decreed differently than he did?
Oh, that's right. I suppose he could have, but like I said earlier, I believe his decrees flow from his nature. So that's very philosophical. That's saying, could God have had a different nature? Could God have been, you know, completely different? Could he have been a purple rhinoceros? I mean, that doesn't really seem to make any sense.
Stop the tape. So this is CJ, and he's really doing what the leading theologians have done when asked. They are afraid to answer the question, because if they openly say that God was free and he could have decreed one extra raindrop in Noah's flood, then that means that the future was open, and that a fundamental truism about God from eternity past is that the future's open. So they're afraid to say, even though when they're writing for themselves and not in a debate, they'll say that God freely decreed. But when you ask them, as Will Duffy asked theologian Matt Slick, Could Eve have eaten from a different apple? Could she have bitten from the same apple, if it was an apple, on the other side instead of the side that she bit it from? They cannot say yes, because that implies then that the future was open and God literally was free. If they say no, then they're trapped in the Zeus pagan Greek conception that even God himself is stuck in fate. So these simple questions falsify the theology at the most foundational level, and indeed, God being free is central to the entire understanding of who he is, because he's a person, and a person has to have a will, and a will is the ability to decide. So if God was free, and then he traded away his freedom for what? Why would he trade away his freedom to be able to think a new thought? Why? Because he didn't trust himself? Well, Calvinists say that they wouldn't trust God if he were free. So maybe they're onto something in their misunderstanding. Maybe that would be the logical conclusion of their bad theology. Let's continue.
So let me elaborate then, because I'm actually not talking about God's nature at all. Could God have created the heavens and the earth with one more star than he did?
Could he have? If you're so you're going back to his decree, could he have changed his decree? And I'm saying, I guess, but it doesn't really matter in this debate, because God did what he did. And I believe that he knows why he did it. I don't know. You don't know. I mean, obviously, neither of us are claiming to know the reasonings for why God has done everything that he's done. But I'm not really sure why that question is relevant.
So here's why the question is relevant, is because if God had the ability to decree differently, that means the future was open. And if God didn't have the ability to decree differently, that means he never had free will.
But that's coming from your perspective that's saying that God's decree happened. Do you believe God's decree happened within time and space?
Well, I'm talking about the Calvinist decree, which is your position and not mine.
But do you believe that God had any sort of decree?
I believe that God created, and I believe that he could have created differently. I believe he freely created, freely chose what to create, and he could have created differently if he wanted to. For example, he could have created one additional type of butterfly more than he did. You seem to be struggling to admit that.
No, because the reason that it's different, my position is different, is because I believe that God created time, and that while he works in time, like you talked about in the incarnation, although I'm sure I'll have some things to ask you about that, while he works in time, he reveals us to himself in time. He is outside of time as well, and he's not bound to time. And so what he has decreed comes from eternity past. And so it's very different. Say the future is open. You're talking about things within the confines of time. I'm saying talking about something that's outside of time. His decrees are outside of time because it happened before the foundation of the world.
Let me try this one more thing. Did God have to decree?
Did God have to decree?
Sure. Could he have chosen not to decree?
I think that if he would have chosen not to decree, we wouldn't be here right now.
So does that mean you believe that he could have chosen not to decree?
No. What I'm saying is that's a silly question. God chose to decree, therefore that is a part of God and who he is. He decreed, he has made himself known through the creation, as he talks about in Romans 1, and then special revelation, you know, the Bible and the Holy Spirit. So I don't really see where that's relevant.
So is it your position that for God to exist, he had to have created you?
Me personally?
Yeah, because that's part of his decree.
For God to exist, that's a different question.
Well, I'm asking if God could have not decreed, and you're essentially disagreeing with that. And so if God had to decree, and his decree includes you, I think you're saying that for God to exist, you have to exist for forgot to exist.
That sounds, come on, that's a little bit silly to put it in that sense, to word it that way. I believe that everything that God has decreed, I believe that reality is part of God's decree, and that everything that he has decreed is eternal. It's part of the inner Trinitarian communion. So I don't really see how that's, you know, you're trying to make it like, oh, well, it's about me. It's not about me.
Stop the tape. Matt Slick had a very difficult time with this also, and it does become very personal and exposes the humanist foundation of Calvinism and the settled future. Going back to Plato and Aristotle, the idea that anything perfect cannot change, the false idea, because the baby Jesus was perfect and he changed tremendously, and God the Son became a man, changed tremendously. When you point out to them that their claim that the entire future was always in the mind of God, and that is an essential attribute of God, exhaustive foreknowledge, that means you could say to CJ, you could say to James White, to your Calvinist friend, you can say, do you realize what you're claiming? You're claiming that this essential attribute of God means that you have been eternally in the mind of God, and God would be broken. God could not exist. He wouldn't have one of his essential attributes of deity, exhaustive foreknowledge, if he did not have you in his mind for all of eternity, so that you are actually, according to your broken theology, you are a necessary requirement for God to be God. The foundation of humanism that Calvinism stands on has come full circle. Let's continue.
I'm just a small fish, a small speck in the entire story, just like you are, you know. So, you know, everything is meaningful. Everything is meaningful. I believe that everything is meaningful. And so,
all right. That's great. I appreciate it. So just for the record, I'm going to state that God did not have to create the heavens and the earth, and that he freely chose to. Because of time, I want to move over to the second bold statement that I made in my opening statement, which is that the incarnation is irrefutable proof that God is not outside of time, but he actually lives his life in sequence. What is your response to that?
Well, I would say that that's silly. You're taking, because the second, you know, the second person of the Godhead came into time and space. Like I told you, I believe that he works in time and space while also being outside of time and space. He's not to be likened to the same thing as a creation. He's the creator. He's above, you know, it's, we can't quite know exactly how it all works, and we might not even understand it in glory, but it's so evident, that, what was I going to say? Oh, you were saying about the incarnation. Yes, Christ, but came into the world and was born as a man. So you could say that's a change. Well, it was part of God's decree. So it was eternal in a sense. Now God was not, he did not have human flesh. Like when, you know, there's, I don't know what you think about like Christophanies in the Old Testament.
That's actually not where I'm going. So let's try this. Do you believe before the foundation of the world that God the Son only had one nature?
I believe that the hypostatic union happened in the incarnation. However, it was part of God's eternal decree. So while
what about before the foundation?
It was an eternal change. What?
Before the foundation of the world, before creation, do you agree that God the Son only had one nature, a divine nature?
Like I said, he took on flesh.
But I'm talking before the foundation of the world. I'm talking before there's even a heavens or an
right. Earth. What I'm saying is he obtained his human nature when he was born as a man. So yes, I'm agreeing with that. But what I'm saying is, it's not really a change because it's part of God's eternal plan.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. By the way, Dr. James White, in my debate with him at the Brown Palace, downtown Denver, had the hardest time with this, so much so that in the immediate aftermath of the debate, he stated publicly to Will Duffy, who was the debate organizer, that he never admitted that God the Son took on a human nature, that he took on a second nature. That's heresy. Even from the Calvinist position, that's heresy. But this line of questioning exposes a horrific weakness, a fallacy in their teaching. Let's continue.
Would you agree that you might not agree that it was eternal, but like when he said to the devil in the garden that I will bruise you with the seed of the woman, I mean, he obviously is making a declaration that that's going to happen.
In the Old Testament, it says numerous times repeatedly that God is not a man or son of man. Do you agree that in the Old Testament, God the Son was seated at the right hand of the Father and that and he only had one nature?
God was not a... You're a Trinitarian, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you say that again? What verse were you quoting?
When the Old Testament says God is not a man or son of man, do you agree that it's referring to God the Son seated at the right hand of the Father who only had one nature, a divine nature?
I'm not exactly sure on that, I'll be honest. That might be God the Father, that might be God the Son. I'd have to look more into that.
Okay, when God the Son was seated at the right hand of the Father in the Old Testament, did he only have one nature, a divine nature?
Yeah, like I said, he didn't get his human flesh until...
Right. And then do you agree right now, seated at the right hand of the Father, is God the Son with two natures?
Yes. He is both fully man and fully God now.
So that's sequence, which means God can't be outside of time. God can't both have just one nature and two natures at the same time. So in God's past, which you just agreed to, God the Son only had one nature, but today he has two natures.
I feel like that's semantics, though, because like I said, it was part of his eternal decree. It was part of what he had purposed from before the foundation of the earth. And so, you know, it was like any action of God, in the Bible, where he works in time with us while also being outside of time because he's higher. He's doing things that he hadn't done before, but they were part of his eternal decree.
Yeah, and again, we can speak about this completely separating the idea of the earth. We can talk before the foundation of the world, and we can talk in the future when the earth is destroyed and there's a new heavens and a new earth, and there is a second person of the Trinity that has a different number of natures.
Right. So what's the question there?
That proves that God has a past.
Stop the tape. If you Google, is God outside of time, millions of pages. It's an honor that we are on the first page, top of the first page. So you might want to check that out. R.C. Sproul Jr. also denied in the immediate aftermath of our Brown Palace debate, denied that God the Son has two natures, a divine and a human nature. This is such a significant issue. It shows that God lives in sequence, and it exposes the humanist, the pagan, philosophical, humanist foundation of a settled future. So we'll continue with more of this debate, and we'll upload, of course, the entire debate to our YouTube channel. This is Bob Benyard. Hey, our website, KGov.com, the store, has great gifts for Christmas. May God bless you.